Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Monday, June 15th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as shortstop Corey Seager was placed on the 7-day IL with a concussion, which he suffered after a collision at home plate with Royals catcher Carter Jensen. Second baseman Josh Smith was activated from the 10-day IL in a corresponding move. Smith has been out since early May, so for over a month, with multiple injuries, a glute strain, wrist inflammation, and viral meningitis. But Smith will take over at second base, sending Nicky Lopez to the bench, while Ezekiel Duran plays every day at shortstop, replacing the injured Corey Seager. Next, we have starting pitcher Christian Scott, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a hip impingement. The injury to Scott is not believed to be serious, so he is not expected to miss more than the minimum 15 days. But with Scott on the IL, starting pitcher Tobias Myers was recalled for the minors to start in Cincinnati, and he was not great. 1 1/3 innings, 4 hits, 7 earned runs, 3 walks with just 1 strikeout, 4 whiffs, 28% CSW, 43 pitches for Tobias Myers. His four-seamer is interesting at 94 miles per hour with 19 to 20 inches of IVB, but Myers couldn't command anything and got crushed in the zone, so he's not somebody we're going to be interested in at the moment. And lastly, we have starting pitcher Grayson Rodriguez, who was placed on the 15-day IL with low back inflammation. Rodriguez shouldn't miss more than the minimum time as he recovers from this back injury, but in a corresponding move, starting pitcher Brett Carey was selected from the minors. He's expected to make his MLB debut in Sacramento on Friday, and Carey's pitched to a 5.92 ERA in 14 appearances at AAA. In terms of transactions, outfielder Kyler Fedko was selected from the minors by the Twins. He was a top 20 Twins prospect, according to FanGraphs, in the preseason. He showed a lot of power and speed last year with 28 homers and 38 steals between AA and AAA, and he's been even better at AAA this year, batting .286 with 15 homers and 9 steals. But at 26 years old, Fedko's clearly a late bloomer. He is expected to be on the short side of a left field platoon to start out with, but if he does what he did in the minors, he could quickly find more playing time in the Twins outfield. But shortstop Orlando Arcia was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Next, starting pitcher Mitch Spence was recalled from the minors to start for the Royals in our nation's capital. He went 4 innings, allowing 7 hits and 6 earned runs, walking 1 while striking out just 1. He induced 5 whiffs, with 22% CSW across 63 pitches, and he struggled to avoid bats, leading to a terrible outing here for Mitch Spence. And he likely won't stick in the rotation with Seth Lugo due back this week as he's recovering from a concussion. Reliever Eli Morgan was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, we have catcher Drake Baldwin, who was activated from the 15-day IL after missing nearly a month with an oblique strain. Baldwin will return to being the Braves' everyday catcher. He was the best catcher in the majors before his injury. His return will send Sandy Leone to the bench and forced Austin Wins to the minors. And lastly, outfielder Lourdes Gurriel Jr. was activated from the 15-day IL after missing about 3 weeks with a hamstring strain. Gurriel could be the everyday left fielder with outfielder Ryan Waldschmidt option to the minors, but Gurriel looks like he's going to be the everyday DH as he slotted in there in his return. Waldschmidt was a surprising option as he is the Braves number, or the Diamondbacks number one prospect, but he hasn't really lived up to his potential thus far with a below league average WRC plus and 0 home runs. So with Waldschmidt option to the minors, Tommy Troy has solidified himself in left field, and with Gurriel locked into DH, Pevin Smith will shift to first base and continue his platoon with Lou James Groover. I'd expect Yeldimar Vargas to shift into more of a utility role moving forward. And in terms of news, catcher Cal Raleigh is expected to be activated from the 10-day IL today. He's missed a month with an oblique strain, and he'll return to being the everyday catcher for the Mariners. Raleigh really struggled prior to the injury with a WRC plus 100 points lower than last year's historic campaign. Johnny Pareda and Mitch Garver will be out of playing time as the previous catchers during Raleigh's absence in Seattle. Next, starting pitcher Kodai Senga, who's been out with lumbar spine inflammation and ulnar nerve irritation for about a month and a half. He's expected to be activated from the 15-day IL to start in Cincinnati today. So that's Kodai Senga returning to the majors for the Mets in a start in Cincinnati. And lastly, starting pitcher Spencer Strider will be shut down from throwing for 4 weeks before undergoing a follow-up MRI and beginning a throwing program. He was placed on the IL over the weekend with elbow inflammation, but now we're going to be without Strider for probably 6 to 8 weeks, seems like, as he'll need 4 weeks being shut down. He'll need at least a couple of weeks to get back through his throwing program and do a rehab stint, et cetera. So 6 to 8 weeks for Spencer Strider. In terms of notable performance, now we can take a look at our notable performances from Monday, a day in which we had just 10 games on our slate. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with first baseman Nick Kurtz, who helped the A's to win against the Pirates, going 3-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, 5 runs batted in, and a walk for good measure. He's up to 18 home runs on the year now. First one went 407 feet at 112 miles per hour, and the second one 380 feet at 106 miles per hour. And Kurtz has had an incredible campaign. It seemed like he got off to a little bit of a slow start, but he's been one of the best hitters in baseball all season overall, and definitely more so recently. Kurtz leads baseball with 57 runs batted in this year. He also leads baseball with a 443 on base percentage, thanks to an MLB leading 67 walks. And if not for Yordan Alvarez, Kurtz would lead baseball with his 1,006 OPS, but he'll have to settle for second place in that category. Next, we have outfielder Pete Crow Armstrong, who helped the Cubs to win against the Rockies, going 4-for-4 with a run, a double, a triple, a home run, and 2 runs batted in. And if you were listening very intently there, that means Crow Armstrong hit for the cycle. He's up to 13 homers on the year. This one went 434 feet at 106 miles per hour. And Crow Armstrong became the 13th player in Cubs history to hit for the cycle. The funny thing about Crow Armstrong's cycle is that he did it in reverse order. So we had home run, triple, double, and single. So we got the single, hit for the cycle. Everybody's cheering for him. And then he immediately got picked off at first base right after completing the cycle. It's a pretty funny turn of events. But Crow Armstrong has been incredible in the month of June, batting 436 with 6 homers and 4 steals. He's a very streaky hitter, but he has been absolutely awesome in the month of June. Next, we have third baseman Colt Keith, who had a huge career game in Houston, helping the Tigers to win, going 3-for-4 with 3 runs, 3 home runs, and 6 runs batted in. He's up to 4 homers on the year now. First one went 411 feet at 109 miles per hour. Second one, 344 at 103. And the last one, 347 feet at 100 miles per hour. Keith has underperformed his power all year with just 1 homer entering play on Monday, despite 10 barrels and an increased average bat speed up to 72 miles per hour. Keith is more of a line drive hitter, and he's cut into his homer potential because of it and because of his lack of ability to avoid pop-ups. He's hit twice as many pop-ups this year than he had in his first 2 seasons. And I don't think we should expect Keith to be more than the league average hitter he's been throughout his career. So incredible performance from Keith, but that doesn't necessarily make him fantasy relevant. And lastly, third baseman Eugenio Suarez helped the Reds to win against the Mets, going 2-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 6 runs batted in. He's up to 7 homers now. First one went 376 feet at 98 miles per hour, and the second one 406 feet at 106 miles per hour. Suarez has struggled mightily this year, entering Monday with a 72 WRC plus, and he's the type of player that falls off a cliff once his skills regress to a certain point and then never comes back. He's 34, so he's clearly nearing the end of his career, and all of his underlying metrics suggest this is that cliff marking the end of his MLB relevancy. Suarez's barrel rate has returned to the single digits for the first time since like pre-Suarez breakout. His 28% hard hit rate is not only a career low, but it's one of the lowest in MLB, in the 6th percentile. His bat speed has declined a full mile per hour, and Suarez is struggling to hit the ball in the air or to the pole side. To cap things off, Suarez's contact rate is the lowest of his career, and all signs are pointing to this being the end for Eugenio Suarez. However, he's one of the streakiest hitters in baseball. Even if this is one of his final hot streaks, this multi-homer game might have kicked off a hot streak that will make him fantasy relevant for at least a couple of weeks. Suarez can really burn bright when he is on fire. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Monday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Chase Burns, who helped the Reds to win against the Mets, tossing 5 shutout innings, allowing just 4 hits and 3 walks while striking out 7. He produced 19 whiffs with 28% CSW across 100 pitches, and Burns earned the Gallows pole by leading baseball with those 19 whiffs. He has been incredible this year and a little bit underrated because of how stacked the pitching class is in the National League. He's tied for second in baseball with 8 wins. Technically, he's tied for fourth because there's 3 guys that are tied for first, but he's got the second most wins in baseball. He's tied for the NL lead in that category as well. Burns is third in baseball with his 192 batting average against. He's fourth in baseball with his 2.01 ERA, and he's top 10 with his 1.02 whip and his 95 strikeouts. So Burns has been one of the best pitchers in baseball this season. Next, we have Kaiwei Tang, who did all he could, but the Astros lost to the Tigers. He went 3 1/3 innings, allowing 6 hits and 5 earned runs, walking 2 while striking out 9. He induced 14 whiffs with 41% CSW across 81 pitches, and Tang earned the King Cole with his 41% CSW leading baseball on Monday. He also fanned a career-high 9 batters, and this was a weird game in which Tang had a ton of success, but didn't lead to success, meaning he had really good numbers, 9 strikeouts, 41% CSW, but he allowed 5 earned runs. And it was even weirder because his signature sweeper allowed the most damage, while curveballs and four-seamers stepped up to make this a somewhat productive start because of the strikeouts. Sweepers still induced 4 whiffs with 38% CSW, but they served up 2 of the 3 home runs he allowed in this one, as his locations were all over the place. Luckily, Tang commanded fastballs upstairs better than usual, as four-seamers returned 5 whiffs and 40% CSW despite sitting over a tick down in velocity, while curveballs did what the sweeper usually does with 5 whiffs and 56% CSW, propelling his PL award-winning start. Tang doesn't have the arsenal, depth, consistency, or command to be trustworthy in future starts, and this was likely his last start for a while, with Hunter Brown returning from the IL and Tang likely the odd man out in the rotation. Next, we have Zach Wheeler, who helped the Phillies to win against Marlins, tossing 6 scoreless innings, allowing 2 hits and 3 walks while striking out 9. He induced 11 whiffs with 34% CSW across 97 pitches. And it was great to see Wheeler sitting 96 with his four-seamer, but he spread his strikeouts out pretty evenly, with multiple coming on four-seamer, splitters, sinkers, and cutters. Wheeler hasn't consistently had the same velo at 96 he had last year, but it hasn't mattered because his command has been exceptional, leading to immediate ace-level production, as Wheeler's produce a 2.01 ERA, a 0.85 whip, and 26% strikeout rate in 10 starts this season. That is ace-level production. And lastly, we have Dustin May, who helped the Cardinals to win against the Padres, tossing 9 shutout innings, allowing just 1 hit and 1 walk while striking out 9. He induced 15 whiffs with 35% CSW across 101 pitches. What an outing for Dustin May. I've been pumping up May for weeks now, and he finally had his magnum opus with a complete game 1-hit shutout. He even carried a perfect game into the 7th and hung on for a near Maddux at 101 pitches. It caps off a highly impressive string of starts that stretches back weeks for May. If we go back to the beginning of the season, May allowed 13 runs in his first 2 starts, but he bounced back with a 2.45 ERA and 16% strikeout rate across his next 5 starts, driven by improved movement and velocity on all of his pitches, allowing him to consistently induce weak contact and ground balls. It was solid production, but it was underwhelming without the strikeouts. It was a clear lack of strikeouts at 16% strikeout rate. The Ks started to tick up on May 9th, and May hasn't looked back since. After fanning no more than 5 in his first 7 starts, he's fanned at least 6 batters in 6 of his last 7 starts, and during those 7 starts, May has a 2.60 ERA, a 0.82 whip, and a 29% strikeout rate. That is absolutely elite production, and combined with the floor he established with his ability to induce weak contact on grounders because of his improved stuff, the ceiling floor combo for May is absolutely mouth-watering. If we just look at all of his starts since those first 2 initial blowups, it's a 2.54 ERA, a 0.98 whip, and a 24% strikeout rate in 12 starts for Dustin May. That's certainly well worth rostering in every format and league depth, and I'm riding with him knowing that even without the strikeouts, he'll still provide ratios and wins. So Dustin May absolutely needs to be rostered everywhere, especially after this incredible performance on Monday. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Monday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Yoandrés Gómez had a perfect four-out save, his seventh of the year. Paul Sewald worked around a solo shot for his 18th save, and Tanner Scott recorded his eighth save with a perfect ninth. In terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Clayton Beter pitched a hitless eighth up by four, and Gus Varland pitched a scoreless ninth up by four. So both of these guys are going to be in the saves conversation for the Nationals. Next, Daniel Palencia pitched a hitless three strikeout ninth, trailing by one, and earned his second win when the Cubs walked it off in the bottom half. And lastly, Juan Mejia was called upon for a four out save by the Rockies, and he immediately loaded the bases in the ninth by making a throwing error and walking two batters before handing the ball over to Seth Halverson, who let the Cubs walk it off. Mejia earned his fifth hold by recording the final out of the eighth, but he was tagged with his sixth loss while Halverson blew his first save. And if you're wondering where Antonio Senzatella was during all of this, well, he was on the bench because he allowed a run while pitching the sixth inning. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Tuesday, June 16th, the day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games. My matchup of the day is Dylan Cease versus Peyton Tolley. Cease has looked incredible this year with improved fastball velocity and improved changeup shape. He's just been so dominant. He had the most whiffs in all of baseball this season in his most recent outing, so I'm excited to see how he follows that up. While Peyton Tolley has one of the best left-handed fastballs in baseball, I'm excited to see what he can do versus the Blue Jays. In terms of probable starters, we've got six guys in the auto starts tier, including Cease and Tolley. We've also got Garrett Cole versus the White Sox, Logan Gilbert versus the Orioles, Jesus Luzardo versus the Marlins, and Drew Rasmussen in Hollywood. Our probably starts tier has four guys, and our questionable starts tier has nine. And that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Brandon Young in Seattle. His fastball is incredible, the four-seamer, and he does a good job of getting it upstairs. He doesn't have the greatest support for that four-seamer. I've been comparing him to a guy like Ryan Nelson, who's got a great four-seamer, but not the best support. However, Young's slider and splitter have been much better recently, and he's had a really great string of starts recently. Heading to pitcher-friendly Seattle, Young should have a lot of success there. I'd also keep an eye out for Kumar Rocker in Minnesota. He's in Texas versus the Twins. Rocker is not my favorite pitcher, but he does have the ability to find success. He's proven that this year. The floor is not great. It's not stable. The ceiling isn't very high, but if he's able to pull off the BSB with fastballs upstairs and secondaries down low, then Rocker could find more success than when he goes dancing with the disco, just trusting a bunch of sliders in the zone. So that's Kumar Rocker versus the Twins. In terms of hitter suggestions, I target Braves hitters versus Adrian Hauser in Truist Park because Hauser has a 5.54 ERA on the season. I'd also target Mets and Reds hitters in Great American Ballpark. Not only is it one of the best hitters parks in baseball, but we'll see Kodai Senga returning from the IL looking to build on his 9 ERA, squaring off against Brady Singer and his 5.61 ERA. Lastly, I'd target Pirates and A's hitters in Sutter Health Park. Keller has a 5.14 ERA, while Perkins has a 6.25 ERA. It's Mitch Keller versus Jack Perkins in that one. So not the best pitching matchup, not the best pitcher's park. So could be some fireworks from Pirates and A's hitters in Sacramento. Now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. Yoandrés Gómez has pitched on back-to-back days and in three of the past four. But it could be anyone in the Twins bullpen getting the save opportunity. Anthony Bonda, Taylor Rogers, Andrew Morris, and Travis Adams are the likeliest candidates. Paul Sewald has pitched on back-to-back days and in four of the past five, so expect Juan Murillo to get a save opportunity if one arises for the Diamondbacks. And lastly, Clayton Beter has pitched on back-to-back days, so the likely options to replace him are Gus Varland, Richard Loveletti, or Orlando Ribalta. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP breakdowns of every single start via the Pitcher List player cards. I also do daily SP streamers as well. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.